Books on Tape presents A King's Commander by Dewey Lambden, read by John Lee. Ansocia Ione et Pallade fretus amis soma speret magis et freta iusa capesat. Sicqua operis tanti domito consurgere ponto fama queat. Or shall he trust rather to the aid of Juno and Pallas of the ringing armour, and launch forth at the king's command, if haply, the sea subdued, some renown could arise from so great a task. Argonautica, Book 1, pages 73-76, Valerius Flaccus. Part 1. Chapter 1. Dearest, Lurie whispered into her sweet-smelling hair. Oh, dearest God, Alan, Caroline responded in a like whisper, though they could have shouted for all the clamour of a sloop of war readying to set sail. My only love. A few more minutes, Lurie squirmed in rising impatience. Just a few minutes more and I'm safe, I think. Mostly, anyway. There were limits on how even the fondest captain and his wife could behave in public. Quite unlike the open bawling of wives, the real helpmates, or the feigned for profit, had made when HMS Jester had at last lowered the easy pendant and put herself back into discipline, and the men of the lower deck had bade farewell to their loved ones, perhaps forever. Squealing, mewling brats, snuffly seamen, and howling harridans, appearing far older and weathered than their years, cursed by fate they'd wed with sailors. Saying their own goodbyes, also perhaps forever, left with a new babe to be, a dubious pay certificate that would go for a quarter of its value with some agate-eyed jobber, a portion of their man's pay signed over with the counsellor of the check, and always, and purposely, 6 months in arrears. A handful of solid coin, perhaps, since Jester had been formally commissioned in a home port, paid just before sailing, so they'd not desert. And, of course, the drunken shrieks of those harpies who'd come aboard as wives, as they would every vessel out of discipline that they could reach, too drunk to know their tour of duty was over, and shoveled back into the bumboats, complaining loudly that they'd been shorted their due fee from their temporary husbands. Yesterday had been the hands' turn for partings. Today it was the gunroom's. Unseemly weepings, wailings, and gnashing of teeth was not their way, not in public, at least. "'Tis been so good to have you home, even for a few scant—' Caroline shuddered. "'I thought 'twould have been longer. I wished—' "'I know, dearest,' Alan sighed, shuddering himself as he used the wide brims of her stylish bonnet to screen them from the men in the waist, to kiss her soft, sweet lips just one more time, though they'd sworn to settle for last-minute affection in his great cabins. But things went so hellish good, so quickly, I've—' From the corner of his eye, Lurie espied their new charge, young Sophie, Vicomtesse de Maubeuge, that unfortunate frail orphan of the Terror and the evacuation of Toulon. Wan, pale, well, not that wan any longer. In fact, she was eyeing him with a suspicious, yet sad, well, call it a leer, damn me if he couldn't. He gulped down his terror of her. Should she ever reveal to Caroline his carousing in the Mediterranean with Phoebe? Quick turn, hugging Caroline harder, turning her so her back was to Sophie and her almost mocking brow, and to escape that lifted brow as well. A few more minutes, pray God, he thought fervently. Off and away, then, and if it comes out, I'm 1,000 miles alee. I'd hoped to be in port longer as well, love. Get back to Angles Green. Let you show me off, Lurie said, essaying his most fetching grin, to tease and dandle his way free, and leave his lovely wife laughing. Get everything settled before— Damn me, sir! Down! Get down this instant! What the bloody hell you think you're playing at, young sir? Mon Dieu! Merde alors! Sophie gasped. Hugh! Caroline shrieked. Baby, don't move! Lurie's younger son had gotten away from his watchers once more, and had scaled the starboard mizzenmast ratlines again. This time he was halfway to the fighting top. Alan sprang to the bulwarks, getting a foot up on a carronade slide carriage, then the blunt iron barrel to swing into the shrouds and go aloft. "Hang on, lad! Don't go an inch higher, hear me?" Taut as the mizzen stays were set up, as tensioned as they were through the dead-eye blocks, the shrouds thrummed and juddered as Alan fearfully climbed, ratlines quivering with each rushed step.
"But, Daddy!"
Hugh protested. Aye, he did have a good grip on stays and ratlines, leaning into them. His pudgy little fists were a pink pair of vices on the tarred ropes. Yet, Lurie reached him, came eye level with his son.
"I told you," he panted, fuming. "I told you you will never do this. It's for seamen, grown men."
"But, Daddy, t'other boys,"
Hugh whined, gesturing briefly to the clutch of snot-nosed ship's boys, the usual mob of beau-nasties carried on ship's books as servants, some of whom were only double the total of Hugh Lurie's precocious and terrifying 4 years.
"Down, I say," Lurie barked. "Now, and carefully."
"Aw,"
Hugh grumbled, casting one more wistful glance aloft to the topmast truck, which had been his intent. Well, at least the cross-trees, if truth be told. On deck at last, smudged with tar and slushes, Caroline knelt at his side in a twinkling, to coo and fret, wondering whether Hugh needed cosseting or another sound thrashing, for foolishness and for smutting his best suit of clothing, if nothing else.
"Monsieur, pardon," Sophie reddened. "I take my eye off him just un moment, et forgive, please."
I could use this, Lurie thought, though wishing to tear a strip off her hide, as he would the merest menial. No, he decided, jape his way out, tug at her heartstrings and her remorse. "A thousand pardons, Captain," Lieutenant Ralph Nollies said, doffing his hat in concern that he might be found remiss. "I should have assigned a hand to shepherd the lads. A topman, it appears."
"A topman indeed, Mr. Nollies," Lurie grinned. "Damn me, he's a little terror, isn't he? Now you know where the next sailor in the family's to come from, eh?"
"Indeed, sir,"
Nollies smiled in return with infinite relief. "Mademoiselle Sophie," Lurie said, turning to the girl, "of course you're forgiven. Nothing to forgive, really. As you become more familiar with us, you'll learn that Hugh will ever be a mischievous little imp and a prankster. You must watch out for that, so he doesn't use you ill, as boys are wont to do, with sisters. From C. Wallace, well, he's the quiet sort. I'm hoping you'll be a civilizing influence upon Hugh, and an edifying one upon C. Wallace, as one more beloved member of our house. Dear as an elder sister."
"Merci, monsieur,"
Sophie replied meekly, all but chewing her lip in contriteness.
"Well then," Lurie concluded heartily, "my dear, perhaps we should bundle everyone into the boy tender before Hugh discovers the powder room and erects a sandcastle out of cartridges."
It was the perfect note to strike, Lurie thought, if he did say so himself. Dear as he loved his wife and children, and he did, in spite of his dalliances, sweet as it had been to have them down from the country to Portsmouth while Jester had recruited and manned, and as tender and passionate as Alan and Caroline's reunion had been, well, damn me if I'm not glad to see the back of 'em, he thought, a touch rueful. "Hugh," he called, picking up the lad to bring him eye level again, "you be as good a boy as you can be, considering. And I promise you, when you're older, next time I'm home, hey, there'll be all the climbing aloft you want, but not before I say. Hear me?"
"I promise, Daddy,"
Hugh replied, and thank God he'd finally learnt how to pronounce his R's.
"And then I'll be a sea officer just like you,"
the boy cried, wriggling with delight. "That you will," he agreed, setting him down. God's teeth, what did the boy expect anyway? Second son and all? It was naval or military service for him.
"And Sir Wallace?"
"Yes, father,"
his eldest replied, ignored in all the confusion, and almost shrugging into himself as the hands of the afterguard trudged by to stations, as sailors and marines prepared to breast to the capstan bars to hoist anchor, eyes darting constantly, not out of boyish curiosity, Lurie was certain, but to see if he would be in the way.
There'd been moments of
Sample complete. Ready to continue?